Welcome to the Marketing Update. I'm Mike Volpe.
I'm Laura Fitton.
And we're coming to you live from the HubSpot headquarters in Cambridge. We got a lot of interesting stories this week. Let's start first with Clout has launched a business portal going a little bit more B2B, gunning for brands. Tell us more, the queen of Twitter. Tell us more about this whole
thing.
Well,
Joe Fernandez and I launched our companies at the same conference in LA years ago. And I remember seeing him stand up on stage and trying to describe what Clout was. And the use case he gave right away was, look, if you're a hotel owner and somebody checks in, let's say, you know, let's name names, right? Let's say Chris Brogan checks in, and you have no idea who Chris Brogan is because that's not your industry, but a little bit of software can come up and say, like, hey, potential influencer, you might want to do something nice to him. That was the original vision behind Clout. It wasn't necessarily this weird ego schmear that it's been for years. I think that was kind of a phase of gathering data. And I've always, Matt Thompson at Clout's good friend of mine, is the CTO, love that guy, so question a lot of the stuff Clout did over the years, right? But this makes a lot more sense. And I don't know if it was what they were gunning for the whole time and they just needed to build up enough data for it, but it's a really interesting idea and it kind of demystifies all the figuring out brands have to do about social. And so far, the only brands that have done well on social are the ones willing to invest the human power and the software to really figure it out on their own. So I think there's a lot to this. What did you think?
I think it's interesting. I think it could be cool. I think there's other people that have tried to do things like this.
There's lots of
bodies along that road, right? But I think that they did also say that in the future they will enable companies with ways to then interact. Mm-hmm. This is more of a dashboard of like, okay, out of the people following you, talking about you, here's some analytics about what they look like and some of the people that you might want to think about approaching on a one-to-one basis, but you can't do anything with it then. You have to then take that information and be like, oh, now I'm going to use some other tool to go do something with it. So I think as they build it up more and become more and more robust, it could be interesting. I think that people have been trying to do this kind of thing, and this is another good option where there's like some aggregation of data to tell you something about the networks of people that are following you and talking about you and which people you might want to spend a little bit more time with. So, yeah.
Cool
stuff. Next up, we have...
We also saw something from a company called Parse, which does mobile back-end platforms. So a developer wants to build an app. There's a lot of technical stuff involved with mobile back-end. I know for me, the company I know better in the space is Convey, a local company here. So they've realized, look, we've got 500 million push notifications we're sending every month. We have a lot of information there about how people interact with their mobile apps, how people interact with their phones. Let's offer an analytics service in addition to providing our back end as a service.
Yeah, so basically all those push notifications you're getting from your apps, if you're a developer, you'd want to know, well, when you're sending those, how many people open and interact with your app within what time after receiving what push notifications.
Which ones?
It's basically just like, it's essentially app analytics or marketing analytics for your push notifications. So sort of cool. The thing that I thought was interesting was when you started to dive into it, they have a free account where you can send 1 million push notifications per month. Free.
They want more data.
Wow, apparently, yeah, interesting. Because and then for 2 million, it's like $200 a month or something like that. So like, I don't know. So interesting. I was sort of surprised by it. It's like, wow, that seems like a lot for free. Because I think for most apps that haven't had very much mainstream adoption, 1 million push notifications is a lot. You know, if you have 50 or 100,000 users, that's a fair amount per month per user, you know? So
No, it's a ton, but I think that's one of the reasons I was seeing this sort of like, okay, you know, the analytics for you, you're hosting your app with me, give you your analytics, but if I'm Parse, I want to get as many pieces of information about this in general across all apps.
Yeah.
So I can start talking to advertisers, so I can start providing data services that are more aggregated across app performance in general.
Yeah.
So that, you know, 1 million free push notifications is more data for me.
Cool. One other final note of that is that as a company, they're sending 500 million push notifications per month. So you start to see sort of the rise of mobile and customer interaction channels that are outside of email and outside of other things. So that's sort of interesting because that's just them. And sort of beyond that, there's many, many more push notifications being sent that people either built themselves.
Although I don't know about you, my reflexes are bad. And often I'll be trying to do what I was already doing on my phone and I'll accidentally hit that push notification and then something launches.
I will say I have spent a lot of time with all three brand new iPhone 5s that I've gotten. Two of them dropped and broke. Long story. But
okay, next time I blow through an error, I'm going to remind you of that.
Yeah, different budget. But anyways, now we're getting into personal stuff. But
I have trouble with laptops.
I've spent a lot of time in the notification center, like muting stuff because I really, there's a few notifications I really want and there's a lot that I just do not want.
So, yes.
In any event. All right. Next up, this is interesting and this is about, you should talk
about this. I feel like this is old home week. I'm like, oh, and I knew Joe and I knew Matt.
So hashtags.
There was a guy named Chris Messina like 100 years ago who borrowed the hashtag convention, I believe from IRC, and said, how could we make this work so that Twitter would have tagging? Because at the time we had like, you know, maybe threes. We didn't even have Facebook yet. Right. We had Flickr and you could tag there. We had YouTube and you could tag videos. We had Twitter and you couldn't tag. So he proposed this like arcane, crazy, impossible to implement system. I'm like, that'll never work, right? I was wrong. Father of the hashtag. Like, I have high school kid friends who will be like using it verbally.
Oh,
like,
yeah, people now say,
oh, my God, we went skiing this weekend, hashtag pow.
Yeah, totally, yes.
And what is the pow, anyway?
I'm not sure what that means. I'm too old to know that.
Powder.
But, oh, got it, okay.
Because dirt is like hard to say, right?
Okay, I thought it was good, like the old school, like Batman, when like they would punch each other and it'd be
that's
like, pow!
That's why it drives me nuts. Pow already means something, kids.
Yeah.
Especially when people my age start using it. I'm like, really? Oh, I just whacked the microphone.
Oops.
So, all right, back on topic. The hashtag, nobody argues, incredibly, incredibly mainstream now.
Yes.
Incredibly powerful. I've always thought of them as like, you know, Times Square happening out of nowhere within seconds. Millions of people all aggregating around one focal point. And then often they dissipate right away.
Yep.
Sometimes they carry on as communities.
And it's been embraced by not only people, but also brands. Because something like a huge percentage, I don't know if we have it here, but a big percentage of Super Bowl ads and many ads in general, but a lot of Super Bowl ads, like 25% or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was like 1 in 5 last year. I don't know.
20-25%, something like that. So a big, big percentage of them were incorporating hashtags to try to drive online discussion about their
hashtag
TV
opportunity.
Ads. Right, exactly. Like, yeah, exactly.
It's the hashtag
sign. And what's funny is during the Super Bowl, I actually tweeted that it's no longer remarkable to include a hashtag in your TV ad because it's not. So it's like it's become so mainstream, but it's become so mainstream. They're in print ads now.
Yeah.
It's like everything. Yeah. So when is the direct mail going to get the hashtag? Maybe we should bring the hashtag to cold calling. Remember that hashtag cold calling? Like you're leaving a voicemail and you're like
hashtag
call me back. Maybe something
hashtag,
or whatever.
Sales rep.
Yeah, exactly. Hashtag cold call. Anyway, so
what's
happening with the hashtag though? Because it's big on Twitter, but
Facebook. The Wall Street Journal has this.
Yes.
God love them. They've. Facebook is going to incorporate it into their social network, which
or
will be interesting.
It says they're working on it, so we think that they probably will, but they're trying to figure it out.
How.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the huge differences over the year between Facebook and Twitter was, you know, Twitter's wide open search. Everybody in the world can search it. Facebook's a lot more locked down.
Yeah.
But Facebook just rolled out search.
Yes.
Which is a huge
probably
step
personalized
towards
search,
being
different,
able to implement hashtags.
So
that's going to
be interesting
to watch.
And just interesting, something to keep an eye on. But definitely, I think the notion of the hashtag and like tagging conversations around certain topics, definitely here to stay. We have more news from Twitter. Apparently a big week for the Twitterverse. Small advertisers can now use all of the more advanced features of the Twitter advertising platform that they didn't really have access to before. And Twitter's been slowly giving their advertising tools to more and more accounts because they actually still had it limited to a small number of the overall number of Twitter accounts because they've been sort of slowly rolling out their self-serve ad platform.
Yep.
So you could always advertise on Twitter if you had like a big budget and were willing to work with like an individual rep. And then they've been slowly giving out more and more individual self-service access. So for the smaller businesses out there, you might want to relook at what options you have within Twitter in terms of targeting, because with the new advanced tools that you can now access, there is some more power there.
Go into your dashboard, take a look around. And you and I have talked about this before on this podcast. Twitter's done a great job of rolling things out very cautiously to ensure quality. Because if advertising on Twitter gets super junky, it just won't work. The whole thing's going to implode. It's such an easy platform to unfollow, to ignore, to block, to filter, and to complain. So, you know, I think it sounds like they were being very elitist by only letting big brands have these tools if they talk to a sales rep. But certainly in the very, very beginning, that was not about getting the most money possible. That was about doing the maximum hand-holding possible and making sure the companies did it well, had success, which makes a lot of sense. I'm kind of surprised more platforms don't do it that way.
Yeah, I think I think everybody knows that it's harder to build software to make all this stuff easy than it is to just get a human involved and like figure it out. And so it takes longer to get the self-serve platform going. So worth checking out.
What so do we Mike, on this next one,
I know.
This is going to be the Mike
I love
show
this
because
one.
I don't know that much about SEO.
Topic,
I don't understand it that well.
But here's,
I was shocked at the highlight of this article that if you have as little as 50% suspicious links, you could have a rank drop. That's a huge number of suspicious links.
Isn't it crazy?
There's no victims here. There's no innocent victims on this one. I don't know. Maybe there are. Tell me. Educate me.
50%. What I would say is that the great thing about all of this is that SEO is becoming more more like something that's easily explained to a normal person. Because you no longer need to understand like all this like esoteric like little tricks that you can pull because Google is slowly making it harder and harder to trick them. And we've been saying for years at HubSpot,
don't
think that you can trick
Google.
They are smarter than you. They're smarter than everyone.
You can't
don't try
fool
to trick them.
Mother Nature.
It's just not going to happen. So what they're doing here is with the big update, the Penguin update, they started to penalize sites that had a lot of spammy links. So basically sites that it looks like they had gone out and done a lot of very direct, very targeted link building in a somewhat sketchy way, they would start to drop you from the rankings. Not completely gone, but like push you way down because they're like, you figured out a way to trick our algorithm. We now know that you have been tricking us and we don't think that that's necessarily right. So they look at lots of things, but basically they look at all of your links and they look at essentially how suspicious they are. How much does it look like you might have paid people for them? How much are they like the perfect link and have the exact right anchor text keywords going to this page that talks about that specific term? Is the content of the page linking to you? Is that content similar to the content that's on the actual page? So is it like, okay, this article that's talking about something is linking to this other article that's talking about the same thing, and that would make sense? Versus like, some page about, some band linking to some page about marketing where they have nothing to do with each other, and clearly there's something nefarious going on there with the link. So they're doing lots of things like that. And when they first rolled out this big update, they said, okay, if a huge portion of your links, if like 80% of your links are sketchy, we're going to drop you. And that's
fair
like
enough.
That's like the worst people on the internet, right? The most
80%.
Terrible, I know, the most terrible people on the internet, we're going to drop you. Now, they're saying, okay, well, if half of your links are sketchy, we're going to drop you. I'm like, hooray, like this is great, like keep going. Like I would say the probably the right ratio.
The number's still that high.
It's interesting. So I would actually say it's probably around maybe 10 to 20%, something like that, is where they probably need to get to. It probably also does need to be different for different size websites. So if you're a site like HubSpot and you have like hundreds of thousands of people linking to you, it's really, really hard for someone to say, 300,000 sketchy links at you to like make it so that Google would drop you. Because the one thing some SEOs are concerned about is this, is like, okay, well, if someone,
nefarious
if you have,
attacks,
but if you, let's say
right.
you only have 100 links coming to your website. If someone built 50 sketchy links, well, they'd have to do a little bit more of that because it'd be 150, whatever. If they built 100
right.
sketchy links into your site, it's not that hard to do because they're sketchy because they're easy ones to get, right? Would you then get dropped from the rankings? And so if you were competing with another like small business and they only had 100 links, could you do that to like screw them out of their organic ranking? So I do think that that's what Google needs to watch. So I think the standard
right.
should be different based on the number of links to your site. But I would say it'd be really, really hard for somebody to do that to a HubSpot or another bigger company. And in that case, I think this is awesome because the majority of our links, the vast, vast majority of our links are earned links that we're not even trying to get that people link to us because our content is good and we're playing the SEO game the way Google wants you to play it, which is by providing value to the users.
By being good at providing value instead of playing the game.
This is the whole point of why I think inbound marketing is the next generation of SEO. This is why Rand Fishkin talks a lot about inbound marketing because he knows that's where all this stuff is going, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean as an SEO that you're totally out of luck. It just means you need to continue to evolve your skills as you always have to have
you
done.
Need to
and now it's more about creating value for users.
You need to respect what the search engine is there to accomplish and
exactly
work within
right.
that framework. So tell me two things, right? I'm a business. 5 years ago, I hired someone for SEO because I didn't know that much about it. Yeah. I have no idea what that person did or didn't do to my site until a Penguin update comes. And then I'm the one screaming loudest going, Google, you just screwed me. Which, by the way, don't scream, Google, you just screwed me after a Penguin update. Because usually that means you were doing something bad, even if you didn't know you were doing it.
Yeah. This is like,
don't raise your hand and be like, right. I was doing something bad.
Well, this is like the cops finally caught you for something you were doing illegally for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
The cops didn't screw you. You were doing this thing for a long time.
So let's
you were just
layer,
getting away with it.
Let's layer the, that SEO person from ages ago or from recently, but I didn't know they were scummy.
Yeah.
And then the competition idea you said of like, oh my God, what if my competition's doing this to me? How do I protect myself as the business owner? How do I look and audit and get a sense of who's linking to me?
So there's some tools both from a company called Majestic SEO and from SEO Moz that you can use to sort of get a sense. And actually the article we're talking about, which is on Search Engine Land, had a link to a company that used those tools to do some analysis of some websites to say like how many were getting the stuff and whatever. So those are two places you can go to get a sense of like your links. You can also use, you could actually sign up for a free trial of HubSpot as well, and then put your site in there, and then we'll give you, I think, at least 1,000 links in the trial, and then you can go through those and see how many you know about and how many are sketchy or not. You can do some of that analysis too.
Take a free sample.
So there's a little sort of like some auditing that you can do. But the bigger question is like, well, what should you be doing today? And that's the other part of your question. What you should be doing today is just doing inbound marketing, creating as much awesome content as you can, and promoting that in non-sketchy ways so you get more links. Because the best way to insulate yourself, to inoculate yourself against an attack is to have it be harder to attack you, right? To build up your antibodies. And your antibodies are good, quality
links. Inbound marketing is an immune system.
It kind of is, right? So if you have, again, you don't want to be the one with 100 links. You want to have 500 or 1,000. Because the more you have, it insulates you against any potential attacks like that. Or just weird stuff happening where like a bunch of sketchy people link to you for some weird reason, right?
Right.
So, in any event, I'm going to skip this one, this last one, because I want to talk about this. Because we were just talking about things, sketchy things happening. So, Laura didn't love talking about this.
In the last 48 hours, the internet lost.
So, why don't you explain, before we get into what we were talking about, what happened? Just the facts, what happened?
Female developer evangelist, employee of SendGrid by the name of Adria Richards, is sitting at a conference, gets to hear with the sexualized talk behind her, decides to handle it in a very public way, inviting the internet to comment, because when you handle things in a public way, that's what happens.
So basically she took a
turns around, takes a photo of the people in question, tweets, that's not cool, and a shit show ensues. Am I allowed to say that on Marketing Update?
I don't know. You just did, so I guess. Okay. And what happened?
So I think one
of the guys got
step
fired.
Step one of the people behind her who were wearing their company shirts, right? So there's the first marketing thing. If you're wearing your company shirt at a conference, don't violate the terms of service of the conference, because the conference itself also got involved and said, this isn't cool. This isn't how we want our conference community to work.
Right, because I think
the organizers walked the guy out.
Kicked him out of the conference.
The company who employs the guy, I believe is Playhaven, investigated, talked to him, confirmed what was said and what wasn't said, and made their own grown-up, their company decision to fire him.
Right.
The internet decided that was her fault, and promptly a witch hunt began.
Yes.
The witch hunt involved rape threats, death threats, the ugliest forms of the internet, the most, you know, women in tech. I always smile and say, oh, this stuff isn't that big a deal, but it happens. It's very ugly. I've had very ugly things happen to me as well. Again, not siding with her and saying she was right, saying the internet got insanely ugly to the extent that some developers felt so offended by, may I remind you, Playhaven's decision to fire one of its employees, that they launched a DDoS on all of SendGrid, which is...
So basically they used computers on the internet to attack SendGrid.
To take her employer down and deny service to her employer's customers.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the follow-up is
unrelated
to the DDoS and things like that, but
not unrelated to the DDoS. I think SendGrid did fire their employee, and I think it was a range of things. They had to protect their customers.
Yeah.
You had a developer evangelist who had just upset half the developer community. She's not going to be that effective as a developer evangelist for anybody anymore.
Yes.
That is true.
Yes. I think overall, it's like, okay, so there's so many things we can talk about.
Everybody
here.
Lost.
What we kind of wanted to focus on was, what are the things that as a marketer you should take away as learnings from this story? I think number one is, we have very few policies here at HubSpot. We have one over-encompassing policy, which is use good judgment. And I think that there's many people in this entire story, everyone who was sitting there at the conference, that did not use good judgment.
There was
right?
not a lot of good judgment.
There was
judgment.
Just not a lot of good judgment there, either on, you know, the guy's behalf or, you know, the evangelist, like all those. I think they all could have done things very differently. And I'm not going to say like who was right, wrong, because I don't think anyone was actually right or wrong in this case. I think there's lots of mistakes that were made, right? But I would say try to figure out what is the policy that you should have as a company, and try to ensure that you are showing all of your employees what is good judgment.
Yes.
And reminding them that any time in their entire life now, they are in many ways representing the company, especially at a conference, especially if you're wearing the t-shirt, especially if, you know, it says, you know, what company you work for on your Twitter account, what your name is, and like that kind of stuff. Like you are representing the company at all times.
Yes.
Like just at all times you are, right? And people need to understand that. There's no more like, we don't talk about work-life balance at HubSpot, because there's not this division. You put things on separate sides of the scale and they balance out. We talk about work-life integration.
Yes.
And you need a good work-life fit, because there is no separation anymore. There just isn't. So you need to remind all of your employees of that. And that's one thing as a marketer I think you should definitely think about doing. And I think we both probably agree on that.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Absolutely.
I think the second big thing as a marketer is that the internet can be really mean. And the internet can be very evil. And you just need to understand that.
Yes.
And tread carefully, because it is really hard to win a battle against the internet. Right? It's really hard. When someone's launching gigantic DDoS attacks against you, and there's a lot of people that want to get after you for that kind of stuff,
yeah.
It's really hard to, you can defend yourself against those attacks, but it is almost impossible to figure out who it is and like go after them and like attack them and like remove that attack from happening again. Like SendGrid now has a potential problem where basically their costs are going to go up by a lot, because they're now going to be subject to an ongoing series of DDoS attacks, I would say for potentially a long time, because there are people on the internet that will just like harbor this grudge against them for a very, very, very long time. And so essentially they're going to have to build up an entirely new level of infrastructure, which they would have had to do eventually, but they're going to need to do it much earlier in their development as a company. And that's not good. And there's not a whole lot you can do about that as a marketer, except just know that this stuff happens and exists, and try to tread lightly to not like, you know, poke the troll in the eye. Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Literally the troll, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I don't think we disagree on this case. I just think there's just so much ugliness in it that it's just not fun to talk about.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've seen one remark from someone whose judgment I respect, who's like, ah, guy makes joke at a conference, gets fired.
Yeah.
And that oversimplification and creating, even making that guy an object and making that joke an object. I mean, if it was a racist joke, would you have any problem with him getting fired? Feels like that would be a little more obvious, right? So we have a lot of progress to make as a society. But yeah, if you're going to go after somebody very publicly, like she chose to do, the public will respond.
Yeah.
Use your best judgment.
There you go. Well, not yeah.
On that note,
use good judgment, all of you, this week.
I'll give a shout out this week.
Yeah.
I want to give some love to Anne Handley for the wonderful thing she did with our mug.
Okay.
Anne
I thought you were going to say give a shout
out
to Anne Handley for being sick. I was like, I don't think that, I'm not sure how that's going to work, Laura. No, I'm kidding.
Anne was part of our Valentine's Day campaign.
She was.
You know, wonderful people like Anne, Seth Godin, and everybody sent in their best advice on how to create marketing people love. And we sent them all these beautiful mugs to say thank you. It doesn't even say HubSpot. It just says make love, not spam. Well, she was sweet enough and sick enough post South by Southwest, which I'm still sounding a little husky, to post a picture of her hot toddy that she was drinking.
Yes.
And, you know, so she and I ended up having a lot of fun this week in that, you know, you're kind enough to let me reach out to evangelists like this. So we saw the hot toddy. We wanted to thank her for it. We had a task rabbit bring her hot soup and brandy. So it was a fun
she
week.
Wasn't
we
feeling
love you,
well.
Anne.
We sent her some stuff and she blogged about it. And
which was also incredibly nice.
Totally.
So, you know, there's your inbound marketing Zen
fans.
Of the week. Be nice to awesome people.
There you go. And if you're listening, we'd love to have you come by the HubSpot office, but please wait until you're totally healthy and non-infectious. Do not let whatever that is that you have come anywhere near us.
I had sent her an email, and I got her autoresponder, and I wanted to cry. I was like, oh, my God, she's so sick.
Yeah, well, she's also a really clever and amazing copywriter. She's an amazing writer. So her autoresponders, when she's sick or doing whatever, are just like pretty awesome. So,
and I had seen her photo on the social networks, which is like her head on the computer at 10 a.m.
Nice. Awesome.
She's like, I give up.
Cool. All right, well, everybody, have a great week. We will talk to you next week. Let us know what you have to say about the show at Pistachio and at M. Volpe. See ya. Bye.